WBEZ is supported by the Gynecology Research Lab at Endeavor Health. Period pain affects millions of people. Researchers want to learn from those experiencing period pain. The NIH-funded study wants to know whether a common over-the-counter medication can reduce period pain over time. Compensation is available. Learn more at cureperiodpain.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest news. But first, from reversing the flow of the Chicago River to creating Millennium Park, Chicago's no stranger to big landmarks that started from even bigger ideas. That's the concept behind a design competition asking Chicagoans to imagine the future of our public spaces. I mean, what if Chicago's next iconic public space isn't a park, but it's a highway? What if it's an alley? Well, hundreds of bold new ideas are rethinking the places we usually overlook, turning them into community hubs, all while helping the city adapt to climate change. Six finalists have been selected, and in this episode of the pod, a panel of judges will tell us why. At the table, Phil Clement, who's CEO of World Business Chicago, Eleanor Gorski, who's CEO and President of Chicago Architecture Center, and Kenya Merritt, Commissioner of Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, or DCASE. Phil kicked things off with where the idea came from for this competition. Here he is.
You know, first of all, World Business Chicago is focused on the economic growth of the city. And about 2 years ago, working with the mayor, we decided we needed a strategy. Mm-hmm. And so as we convened business executives from across the city, mostly, and civic leaders on the strategy, we found it was almost impossible to get that kind of big, bold, ambitious thinking in the same conversation about next five-year kind of economic strategy.
Right.
We said, let's split it up. Let's do an economic math-focused phase, and let's do a Burnham phase where we can stir people's souls. And this contest was the great way. It was an open contest, yeah. So anyone could enter.
So tell me what you were looking for in submissions.
Sure. You know, we actually were purposely very broad. We wanted to see what the city would come up with. Mm. It was an open, you know, something that transformative for the city, something that could be done. So that was one of the very few criteria. But it was bring us your best, boldest ideas that mm-hmm. you got.
And people did not stop.
They did not stop. We got over 200 submissions.
Wow.
From every walk of life, every neighborhood. That was super important in this effort. And I think also, in the instructions that we got from City Hall was, you know, make sure that everybody gets a chance.
So folks weren't given a specific problem to solve or any sort of parameters. It was open.
We mentioned some things like sustainability and growing population, but for the most part, it was just open.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So let's hear from you, Eleanor and Kenya. Tell me, before we dig into some specifics on these six finalists, because now we're down to the top six, mm-hmm. right? Tell me what comes top of mind? What stands out the most among those finalist ideas? Eleanor?
What stood out the most to me is what the variety was of folks that submitted. We had groups of young people that submitted, mm-hmm. and the graphics were amazing across the board. We also had some institutions like the Morton Arboretum that submitted. That was a surprise to me. You yes. wouldn't necessarily expect them to do, take on a competition idea. But across the board, just the variety, both in who submitted as well as the type of projects.
Yeah. Kenya?
Yeah, I'll just add the diversity of the groups that submitted. We have some community-based organizations that thought about how you activate alleyways. But one of the things that, for me in my role, that was incredibly important is how culture showed up in the submissions. You mm-hmm. had people thinking about culture as infrastructure, which is so incredibly important for me and the work that we're doing when we think about the creative economy and the value that it brings to our city. So folks thought about a house music museum, right? Like
yes.
Chicago is the birthplace of house music. And so what if we had a museum that paid homage to that?
I can't believe we hadn't thought of that already.
Yeah.
And then, that's one of those that makes you think, wait, we don't already have that?
Right, true, as well as other forms of music that originated in Chicago, particularly Black music. And so, like, there are thoughts around how do we think about a Black music museum in our city. And so those are one of the things that excited me in the submissions.
The alleyways, to your point, stuck out to me, too. And I was zooming in on the renderings like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
There are, we could squeeze some other stuff in there.
Absolutely. I think there were two things that I'll build on from the comments that my colleagues made. One was AI made a huge difference.
And talk to me about AI. Yes. How did AI show up in this?
You know, so these contests have historically been, you know, the participants have been fairly rarefied air. You have to be a large engineering firm or architecture firm to be able to do the soundness or even the illustrations. And, you know, we had a 9-year-old boy submit, one of my favorites was a origami crane that was massive. And he also has an Instagram site where he folds origami. But the idea was you crawl to the head of the crane and make a wish for Chicago, and it would be next to the bean. It was beautifully rendered. Engineering was sound. And he's 9 years old. So, it's just the empowerment that individuals had this time was incredible. And then the use of space, the completely clever reuse of space that exists now. And, you know, we all know that alleys are such a benefit. You walk down the streets in Chicago or anyone who visits a city so clean, right?
Yeah.
And they often don't know that that's because we have alleys and other cities don't. But when you think about what all that space could be used for, and then you combine it with other ideas like electrification or other coverings. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a transformative power from this asset that people are thinking about.
Yeah.
So
I'd like to add to that one asset that I was glad was highlighted was our boulevard system.
Absolutely.
And a submittal called Wonder Ways, where it's basically saying this is something we all value. It goes all throughout the city as a green necklace. Mm-hmm. Let's amp up how it's used. I thought that was a really great idea.
And we saw a depth of thinking around it, right?
That's right.
So it wasn't just beautification.
Correct.
It was, trees impact water usage and heat consolidation.
And exercise.
Yeah, and exercise. Yeah.
Very cool.
And
there was a submission called AgriFlats.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It proposed turning a Chicago neighborhood into a food production district using combined like live work units and small greenhouses. So I wonder what impact, Kenya, do you think that this would have on our housing crisis maybe? Or, you know, how important it is to have fresh, local grown food in this big city of ours?
Yeah. So when we think about the housing supply crisis, and it's not unique to Chicago, it's something that we're experiencing across the nation. I was happy that some of the submissions tackled some of those issues in a really creative way. So the AgriFlats is an actual cool concept. It deals with housing density, housing supply in our neighborhoods, particularly in areas where we want to see an increase in population, but also access to food and fresh food. So one of the things that we do at DK's, and it's a little bit of a Band-Aid approach, though, which is why I like the AgriFlats model, is that we have fresh food markets or farmers markets where we bring people together not only with fresh food, but also with accessibility to goods that they may need for their neighborhood. But that's not long-term sustainability. Some of the things that you see in these proposals are long-term sustainability that address many of the issues and concerns that we have in our city.
Another submission called ReLoop. This proposes a car-free outdoor mall in Bronzeville, dedicated to recycling from bricks and large statues made of recycled material to seasonal markets and repair shops. I mean, how would a new pedestrian corridor like this benefit the locals in Bronzeville, Phil?
Well, first, the recycling concept was one that showed up in a lot of ideas. And the notion of having, in our economic plan, we talk a great deal about
you can almost control F the word recycling, and it did pop up a few times.
Yeah.
I know this because I did it.
Yeah, okay, right. And people are thinking about it, and they're thinking about it in super constructive ways. And I think on the notion of creating districts and corridors, which is something that is very much part of our conversation, where you could go someplace and you know, experience live music, experience art, but also experience quantum and experience life sciences, et cetera. This is a real premise of what we're working on in Chicagoland right now. And so the idea of having a district or corridor or concentration of recycling activity, and you know, this is everything from appliances to the huge problem that
yes.
we have as we tear down buildings and rebuild buildings. A lot of that's going into landfill. So that reuse yeah. is transformative again for the city. You know, pedestrian walkways in every place that we looked at them, including Bronzeville, is just, it's all part of this idea of the 15-20-minute city as we look at it. You know, live, work, now grow your food, find your appliance
within
in your
15,
immediate
20 minutes.
Neighborhood.
Right,
yes.
yeah. So this is all great. Lots of great ideas, clearly. But let's turn some of these great ideas into reality, right? What happens now with the best ones? Does it get pitched to the city to develop, Eleanor?
You know, we were talking about this before we came in, and I think it's would behoove us to look at the low-hanging fruit, what's easy to implement, like right away, and where we can have support. And my mind immediately, again, goes to the boulevards. Mm-hmm. I think that that's ready to go to find funding for that. The rest, I think, are going to be a bigger lift. And I think I would look to our various city departments, rural business, to help figure out a strategy.
Yeah, Phil, how is World Business going to help some of these come to life?
Sure. So, well, the most important thing for the Chicago economy right now is we need to grow. And growth gives us funding to do the things that help us with infrastructure. And although I would also say that we have such an unbelievable philanthropic and financial community, too, that is willing to donate to things like AgriFlats. I mean, mm-hmm. I think urban agriculture is the kind of thing that people ask and they'll be surprised what they'll get.
Yeah, for sure.
And the whole idea of the contest was to give these projects visibility. And while something like repairing the years of damage that interstate highways do to a city, separating communities, creating pollution, and changing that, again, could be a beautification process. It could just make things better. But it may also be a way for us to think about how we electrify the city, run new infrastructure and new pipelines for
right.
These things. And so those ideas come together in a way that someone says, oh, I've been trying to do this. I've been trying to figure out how to change this issue, and they're willing to fund.
Yeah. And I would just add that the beauty about the competition is that it started a dialogue, that it allowed for people to innovate. And so there are ideas now that we can begin to explore. And the cool thing that I like that we're starting to do, I think it's this Saturday, and correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, is that we're opening that dialogue up to the public. So yes. on Saturdays from 12 to 2 at the Cultural Center, where we have the exhibition of the 6 finalists, people have an opportunity to engage with each of the 6 finalists, ask questions.
Great.
But most importantly, as Chicagoans or visitors, in their own words, think about what their vision of Chicago should be.
How long will that run for, this public portion?
Yeah, so it'll run through September. Okay. So the competition will culminate in mid-September, but these conversations will happen every Saturday through September at the Cultural Center.
Yep, and we open it up on Thursday at Gensler's, hosting an event, and then the mayor will announce it in September. We'll announce the winner. But back, on the investment topic.
Yes.
I do think that you're seeing these types of ideas being invested in across Chicago. I mean, if you look at the 1901 or the new fire stadium, the Red Line,
the extension.
Also the extension, and then also the Obama Center. You know, these are the types of things that a library used to be a library. The Obama Center is a community center. It's got basketball courts. It's actually everything but a library.
Yeah. It was someone else's big idea.
Yeah. And then these are innovations, though, that are attracting capital. Mm-hmm. When we did Millennium Park, it was, vastly an act of philanthropy. These projects are not. These are projects that people are investing in for good market reasons, for returns. et cetera. And I think that our contest is filled with ideas that people will invest in.
And I wanted to add one thing with the AgriFlats. Why I really appreciated that project is the city has vacant lots. The Cook County Land Bank has vacant lots. And I think this could be a private-public partnership to realize that, where the city does have some skin in the game through the use of vacant lots that are already in their inventory and then augmented by private capital.
I mean, so much conversation now about what to do with these vacant
Correct.
Lots, right? Keeping track of all
Correct.
Of them and, like, turning them into livable spaces.
And the neighborhoods want that. They don't want vacant lots. So this, I'd love this solution for that need.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, remind us, where do folks go if they want to give their public input? Because right now the finalists are all on display at the Cultural Center.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So if you enter on the Randolph side, it's on your immediate left in the Welcome Center. All the finalists are on display. There are also 13 articles that were created in the Tribune on Sundays that where people wrote about Chicago in the year 2050.
Nice.
And that's a great place to go. So is our website at worldbusinesschicago.com.
Folks can get a close look at these proposals. We'll leave it there for now. Phil Clement is CEO of World Business Chicago. Eleanor Gorski is CEO and president of the Chicago Architecture Center. And Kenya Merritt is commissioner of Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, or DCASE. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now we're going to turn to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and WBEZ's All Things Considered producer Noah Jennings. We're fresh off the 4th of July weekend, so of course I asked the panelists how they spent theirs. Noah went first.
Stayed in a lot. You know, that's not usual for 4th of July, but it was so rainy. What else was I going to do?
I've been hearing that from other people. What about you, Claire?
You
were doing the soccer.
I was soccering. Just constant soccer. I was locked in on the World Cup. A lot of great matches. Went to the park. I actually was at the park about 4 or 5 minutes before one of the first downpours.
Ooh.
Walking to my car, timed that perfectly. A lot of great City Fest. Really did their best.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the rain kind of won.
The rain did win. I was home too, Noah. Don't feel bad. But I was home sick. So it was quite miserable. It was quite miserable. My husband did grill and, you know, make some really delicious food.
Encased meats always on the menu for the 4th of July.
So I did dabble. I did enjoy. But yeah, let's get back to that hot and rainy weather this 4th. I mean, less than ideal conditions for fireworks, Claire. So talk to us about, you know, how the great Independence Day fog factored in here.
Yeah, it's hard to light fireworks in the rain, one. And then when temperatures shift, as they did from our extreme heat to our kind of crispy, cool weather right now, a blanket of fog passed through the area and ended up canceling a number of fireworks displays across the suburbs. Really rainy weather in the west and south. So Lombard, Forest Park, Glen Ellen, Naperville, even Tinley Park all canceled preemptively their fireworks display. Some parades kicked off, you know, in the morning hours, but a no-go for the evening spectacles.
You know, it's funny hearing you say that because I feel like nothing was canceled in my neighborhood. The fireworks were a poppin'.
And that's the
every
city is
day.
Gonna do that. The city is gonna still do that. It's actually funny. The Cubs game was delayed for about 15 minutes, I think, in the sixth inning because the fog. But I was getting texts from people, because that's kind of in my neighborhood, saying, oh, the fireworks smoke has paused the game at Wrigley.
Right.
But no, it was the fog. It was a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah. Was it just as annoying in your neighborhood, Noah? Because I mean, even last night I was like, okay, guys, it's July 5th.
I will say it. I don't think there was anything of official fireworks ceremonies happening in
no.
my neighborhood. But I, you know, on the 4th, I went out to grab dinner, and I walked like straight into fireworks being launched, and I see people running in every direction. I'm like, oh, okay, but I guess I better walk on the other side of the street right now as these fireworks get launched. So no, it definitely didn't damper spirits in my neighborhood.
For sure. And things certainly went forward in Evanston and Navy Pier, Claire.
Yeah, the Navy Pier fireworks actually did happen. It was being touted as bigger than ever, better than ever. I guess they had twice as many fireworks covering sort of double the space along the lakefront this year.
The shock on Noah's face describes many of us.
It's like Schrodinger's firework kind of.
Right, truly. I mean, they went off. You could hear them on some videos I watched. You could sort of see faint red and blue, but the fog.
There was so much fog.
Made it really, really difficult to actually see any of those immaculate displays.
I woke up to their Instagram post the next day saying, hey, you know, thanks to all who were there. And we're giving out free centennial rides for the remainder of the summer, you know, on Wednesday nights.
So that's going to be the silver lining. Yeah, I mean, we got a company email, too, that parking had been exceeded in the afternoon. So people were here. They were ready. They just didn't get much of a show.
They saw nothing.
It's the age-old question. If a firework is set off in the fog, did it ever firework at all?
Did it happen? Yeah, right. Well, you know what? You almost walked into some fireworks, Noah, and an airplane landing at Midway was hit by a firework.
Yeah, that was on the 4th. It was around 8:30 p.m. The crew was reporting they heard this loud bang when they were trying to make a landing at Midway. It was a plane that was en route from Atlanta. And, you know, that's got to be pretty scary. But, you know, all 52 passengers, the 6 crew members, all of them were safe. No damage to the aircraft somehow, you know.
Wow.
So I know there's a whole, you know, say what you will about clapping when the plane lands, but I think it might have been deserved on that one
to land
with no damage.
Man, imagine hearing that boom.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? If you were a passenger on the plane. I actually heard a little bit of the call that the pilot had to make, I guess, to the tower. Cool as a cucumber throughout the entire thing. It was just like, yeah, you know, I think we just, firework just hit our aircraft. And
well, they got to be ready for that.
We're just going to land.
You got to be, remain composed.
Yeah, very, way too composed, but thank you. And let's dig into the other side of this weekend because, you know, in addition to the fireworks, there were also several violent incidents around the city, really, Claire, and this was including a mass shooting yesterday morning.
Yeah, always hoping that this isn't the case, but 7 people were shot in 2 separate incidents on the same block in West Garfield Park.
Wow.
Sun-Times reporting a 17-year-old girl was shot around 1:30 a.m. a Sunday in critical condition now at Stroger Hospital. But then police say about 9 minutes later, at least 6 people were also shot on that same block, 3800 West Maypole Avenue. Mm. The other victims, all in good condition for now, 2 17-year-old boys, an 18-year-old woman, and a 19-year-old man, all among the injured.
Yeah. Let's turn to sports, Noah. World Cup, as Clara said.
Soccer.
The soccer. Heartbreak, though, in Mexico City. Mm. I was out yesterday. I saw plenty Mexico jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
Folks were excited. But, you know, talk to us about the game against England last night.
Yeah, it was a close one. It was a nail-biter. It wound up being a 3-2 win for England. They jumped out in front first, and so then it was Mexico trying to come back in the second half. But really the key turning point there was in the 54th minute. England was given a red card. And so if you add in stoppage time there, that's a solid 45 minutes that England's playing a man down. And so Mexico was down 3-2 that whole time. They controlled the ball for the majority of that time, and they just couldn't find the back of the net. You know, I thought that they could have been a little bit more creative on offense. You know, it felt a lot like putting the ball in the corner, trying to cross it. And when England has a height advantage like that, they're going to clear it out. So it was definitely disappointing for all those fans there. But they had the home field advantage too, so it was pretty disappointing.
What about the Mexico fans here in Chicago? I mean, how are they reacting?
Well, they've got to be pretty gutted by it. You know, I mean, it was an inspiring run by Mexico. This is their first knockout win in 40 years at the World Cup to advance to this point, and they felt they had, you know, like I said, they have that home field advantage.
Right.
So this was a huge opportunity to get to the quarterfinals. But, you know, they just couldn't get it done. So, I mean, it's probably mixed emotions, probably a bit raw right now. You know, maybe with a little bit of time, it'll be one that they remember fondly, a run they remember fondly. But right. I think that right now it's got to be pretty tough. But
still stings.
A very dedicated, though, fan base here in Chicago. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say just at the places, establishments I've been to mm-hmm. watch games, some of the Mexico fans have been getting there 4 hours, sometimes six.
Really?
Holding down tables. Yeah, because some of these soccer bars, especially these pubs, get really crowded. But they are in it. They were in it to win it. The
jerseys
was there.
Were literally everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yes. I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot mine. I literally forgot mine. So next, the USA faces Belgium in their round of 16 match. A lot of controversy, though, swirling around this one.
Yeah, that's tonight. The controversy here is that U.S. forward Flo Balogun is going to play despite receiving a red card in the last game. You know, it was a controversial call at the time. It was panned by many when they gave him the red card. But when you're given a red card in soccer, that means you are typically meant to be suspended the next game.
Mm-hmm.
And yet yesterday we heard he's not going to be serving that in this next game. There's some question marks as to kind of how that happened.
How did that happen?
Well, you know, as Patriots, we don't got to ask how, Sasha. But, you know, it certainly seems like, you know, the President Trump may have made some calls with, you know, he's tight with the FIFA president. It's, you know, there's a lot of, well, it's just not going to happen. Not a lot of very clear-cut explanations, but, you know, it's something that coaches, teams, players across the globe are pretty unhappy about. You know, they're concerned about the precedent this is going to set.
Yeah. Well, it's not an unprecedented thing. I mean, it is within FIFA's jurisdiction to do that if they so choose. It's just very, very, very rare.
How is the Belgian Soccer Federation responding?
They're a little angry, to say the least, and confused. So just about 25 minutes ago, the Belgian Soccer Federation now demanding an official explanation from FIFA, essentially just appealing the decision that they made to suspend the suspension, if you will. So the Belgian Federation saying that it has still not received either FIFA's decision or any explanation at all directly mm-hmm. to them regarding the matter. And in these circumstances, you know, the team just really has no choice but to challenge the player's eligibility for the upcoming match. So if they get a response from FIFA, you'll hear it here.
What are the chances of a USA victory, Noah?
Well, you know, this is their toughest test yet going up against Belgium, but they've got a shot, I think. I don't think that this is, you know, an impossible mountain to climb, but this is really where we're going to see what this team is made of. You know, they've been the vibes feel good around this team, I feel. You know, they're not getting outplayed and then proceeding to just luck into wins. They're playing with everything they've got. So, you know, what is certain is if they lose tonight and they're knocked out, they're going to go down swinging. That's how it's going to be. And so given the aggressive nature of this team, they're always going to have a shot.
So if the U.S. men's team advances?
Yeah, it would be their third time ever playing in the quarterfinals, and they would have to face the winner of Portugal, Spain, two powerhouses right there. So that's not going to be. So if they win this one, it will feel good for a second, but you know, then it's going to get serious.
They've got work to do.
That's why the World Cup is so fun, because it just escalates. You know, the pressure gets more, people get more riled up.
So much at stake.
So much at stake.
What stories are you watching?
Well, this is near and dear to my heart, but unfortunately, Chicago's birding community mourning another piping plover chick. Yes, lost on Montrose. We got word of this morning.
Oh, no.
The Chicago Piping Plovers group posted that this is the chick with the green band. Did not make it. That was the one named Tweety. The group says challenging weather conditions this season may have played a role. Of course, they're going to have the animal scientists take a look and investigate the cause of death. But this chick is the second of Amani and Sea Rocket's brood that unfortunately didn't make it.
Oh, geez.
I know. But we've got two remaining chicks. They are learning to fly.
Okay.
And we'll have updates for you certainly on their progress.
Wonderful. Well, what other stories are you watching, Noah?
Well,
when you're
weekend,
not World Cupping, what are you doing?
Well, if it's not World Cup, it's baseball for me.
Right. It's definitely sports.
Always. So this weekend, MLB announced who's going to be playing in the All-Star game this year. In Chicago, you've got Miguel Vargas for the White Sox and Pete Crow Armstrong for the Cubs, mm-hmm. as is required for, you know, each team gets at least one representative. But both those players, incredibly deserving. Of course, they've had great seasons. But I think the real story here is who didn't make it, in particular for the Sox.
Ooh.
You've got shortstop Colson Montgomery. And among American League shortstops, he has the most home runs, the most RBIs, and highest slugging percentage. That sounds like an all-star to me. And yet,
snubbed.
Off the list completely.
Wow.
You can make a case for pitcher Davis Martin as well. So disappointing for the Sox, but you know, I think it'll just be extra motivation for them as this season continues and they're in the hunt for a playoff spot.
Mm. All right. We'll certainly keep an eye. WBEZ's Noah Jennings and Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Hunter Manet. It was edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you just heard, we hope you join us for more and head over to wbez.org/in the loop or subscribe to this feed so you never miss a conversation. Thanks for listening.